You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. Bueno, mi gente, once again, we're back at it with La Verdad Podcast. This is your boy Christian here.
And it's Carlos again. That drive was long as hell. It's way too long. I'm tired.
Are you? You know, it's a pretty nice weekend outside, so you came in at a perfect time. We got the Bandera Festival.
But I was scared, man, because it's a holiday weekend, so I thought it'd be a lot of cars. But what I found is there was a bunch of extra cars leaving Chicago, not coming into the city.
People going to barbecue.
And once I caught that trend, I was like, okay, I'm good. It was just...
There's a lot of stuff going on in Chicago this weekend, so you came in a perfect weekend.
No, man, but when I say 10 miles, I'm where I live, that's, you know, maybe a 15-minute drive.
Bro.
And here the GPS has 45 minutes to get 10 miles, and that's the issue.
Yo, when the GPS says 6 miles, because it takes me about 6 miles from here to, like, a friend's house, and it's about half hour it'll take me. Mm-hmm. And it's like... especially with traffic and all that,
you could probably ride a bike and get there quicker.
Probably walk and get there quicker.
Yeah.
But enough of that, man. Yeah. We got a nice group talk session going on today. We have a couple beers out. We have the Duce chilling right here. But we also have the girls of La Verdad for joining us for another group talk session.
They got a brand now? The girls of La Verdad?
They should get t-shirts.
The girls of La Verdad, I like it.
So who do we have?
The next t-shirt that comes out, # girl talk.
Girl talk.
Group talk, whatever you want.
Oh, # group talk would be pretty cool. So we have V Fig in the house.
I'm back.
And her sidekick. Can I call you a sidekick, Nati?
Yeah, I'll take that.
We have Nati here in the building.
Hey,
how are you guys doing?
Everybody good. Enjoying the
Nati, you look a little
weather.
Tired, man.
Oh,
what's
shut
going
up.
On?
That's rude. That's bad. That's really rude.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Nati's like a sister to me.
I had a good night, okay?
I had to call her out.
No, leave her alone.
She's like a sister to me. But you look good. You look good. You know, you look like
that kind of good night. Hey, shout out to you.
Tune in on Snapchat.
Anyways.
Moving on.
V Fig, how's everything?
Everything's good. This is good. Yeah. I just tried this for the first time.
What are you trying?
What?
What are you trying?
Bud Light with lime.
Oh, okay.
You had to read it.
I did. It didn't have like a giant label on the side.
Because we're not getting paid to market them. So
yeah,
sorry. Gotta take all the
I like that thinking.
Sorry.
True.
Bud Light hit us up.
But we're also joined by another person, a Chicago blogger. And should we call you by your nickname? Should we call you by your full name?
You can call me by my nickname. Lulu, it's a lot easier.
Welcome to the La Verdad Podcast.
Thank you.
We brought her in.
Nice to be here.
We're going
to
put her through the ring. We're also going to introduce her to the group talk sessions. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Chicago.
Okay.
I worked and dabbed in different, like, the industries. Mm-hmm. So I went to Columbia College. I studied journalism, but before journalism, I started doing architect. That shit wasn't for me. I don't know what got me to do architect. I thought I was going to just, you know, make a house look pretty.
Yeah.
But it was more than that. It was like, bust out a ruler, start doing all these things. I'm like, yeah, no. Switched my second semester, started doing journalism and writing, fell in love with it. And I think, like, throughout my college years, I didn't take advantage of like, all these extracurricular activities that we had. So I just waited until my last year to join, like, a journalism group at school. And then ended up going to a conference in Vegas. It was a journalism conference where I did a lot of networking. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of pushed me. And I realized, you know, damn, I'm graduating. I didn't take advantage of all these writing things at school that I had, but I did make a lot of friends and I did network throughout those years and my last years. So then I worked at school for the disabilities office. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I was one of my friends had told me about an event she was doing with the radio station with GCI. And I'm like, okay sure. And she was like, I can't cover this event. It was for Trey Song's album, Chapter 5.
Yeah.
Okay. So she was like, can you go cover for me? She had to do something and she couldn't cover the event. She told her one of the people that she was working with that I was coming. I was like, sure, I'll go. Went there, kind of like starstruck a little bit, not gonna lie. Trey Songz, he's just walking by me, and I'm like, oh yeah,
I gotta ask questions.
I'm supposed to interview. I ended up meeting this person there because I went with a friend of mine, and we met this guy. His name was Chill, really cool dude, and he saw that I was into writing, and so then he said, if I was interested in doing radio with him, and I'm like, heck yeah, like who wouldn't want to do radio?
Yeah.
So he introduced me to a radio station, and I was with that radio station for a little while, and then that stopped, but I did gain a lot of knowledge while being on that radio station, so I learned a lot. And but it's nerve-wracking in the beginning being part of a radio station, especially when it's live.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You never know what you're gonna say.
I had to like put myself out there. At first I was like, I don't want to know, you know, tell people like, hey, I'm in a radio station, you can check me out here. So then I was like, you know, I have to just break the ice. So I told people, hey, Kate, I need you guys to listen to me so that when I come home, or you guys can call me like, hey, you know, what do I have to fix while being on air? Like, am I saying too much? Do I leave a lot of like airspace where I'm just like quiet? So I got a lot of feedback. And as we went on with our radio show, it got better. I was with two other girls. So we had our show every Monday. Mind you, I had to be up at 5 o'clock every day on Monday.
So I would work.
It's too early. I would wake up at 5. I was at work by like 7 because I'm working at the airport. Okay. I would leave work at 11, go to my other job at Columbia College. So I went from one side of town to the other side of town.
The one at the disabilities office?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then I would go there from 12 to 5. In between that time, I would get my show ready. I would contact the girls I was with. And then from there, I would go to Pilsen and I would do my radio show from 6 to 9.
Go busy back Mondays.
Home. Yeah, my Mondays were rough. They were like 15 plus hour days. But I mean, now that I think about it, it was just it was a hustle, and at the same time I learned. I mean, you have to like really bust your ass if you want to like get out there and do stuff. So I networked with a lot of people there. We did like we did events at Soldier Field. It was interesting, and at the same time, I was with a magazine, so I met this other guy and a bunch of friends, and he was like, I'm doing an online magazine. It was called Urban Society, Dreams to Reality, and I'm like, yeah, sure. So I was with them, and every week or every so, we would publish stories.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so he made me, like, part of the editor-in-chief of it. I'm not with that now, so then as time went by, I don't know if I just got lazy with my writing, and maybe I just got discouraged because I was part of something with a radio and a magazine, and that all like fell off. And I don't know, I got real comfortable. I was just working again, Columbia, and then, you know, O'Hare. Ended up leaving O'Hare or Columbia in May, and then now I'm full time at O'Hare. But during that time, I was like, what am I doing? Like, I went to school for journalism. I have all this network behind me. Why am I not utilizing that? So I think being there full-time just pushed me to do my own website, and that's how I began my own blog.
Nice. Perfect. And I think sometimes you hit a little point there where, you know, we tend to get a little burnt out, you know, especially when we're doing everything maybe for free or on a volunteer basis. I know it's happened to me. Carlos can attest to that as well. But it's just always finding that little fire to get you back on. So when you find like your niche or what you really, really want to do, it kind of like builds you back up. But I think we've all been there too. Yeah. And I've experienced that feeling of falling behind.
And when you're working towards goals, I think a real good key that you talked about is the fact that when you started off, you asked for feedback because you weren't that good, but then you improved. And you see it. I think if you hear any of our early podcasts, you'll sense some of that. Like, we're tense sometimes. We're not sure how to ask a question, how to transition from one point to another. And even with Not the NV Fig, the first podcast, they were kind of shy. Yeah. They were talking really low.
And now they'd be hitting me up.
But now they're like, what's up? What's going on?
Now we're like, when's the next girl talk?
Like, she was doing stuff that was live. This is not. So, like,
correct.
I think that took away our fear, at least for me.
So, yeah, because
I was like, okay, it's not live. No one's really listening at the moment. So, it's okay.
Because with the podcast format, Like, if something happens and we really mess up and you gotta stop, it's like, all right, cool, pause it. You can edit that little piece out.
Right, yeah, yeah. Right,
but
right.
When it's live, you have to think on your feet, and you know there's no backup. And so you just gotta prepare for the failure, because it's not a question of maybe, but it's gonna be when. At some point, it's gonna happen.
You see, I did live radio in college, and man, I thought I sucked, because you have to hear your recordings back, you know, in college. And I hate my voice. Even to this day, like, when I hear the podcast again,
I don't like hearing myself.
I don't like the way I sound recorded either.
I'm like, man,
why do I sound like that?
I'd be like, I sound like a Bobo talking. Like, why?
I do like listening.
Like, I don't know
why.
She's like, speak for yourself. Right? I love my
voice. So a lot of times, just kind of like when I was doing it live, I will freak out sometimes, because I'm like, man, if an F-word. Like in college, it was you were in the class doing the radio show and you drop an F bomb or the word fuck, you would get kicked out of the class because the school gets fined about $500 for every profanity used, every word used
in college show. The radio show.
So there, and you know, in college, I used to have a real bad mouth in college. You know,
you
so
I was I remember. Bill.
No, I was just like, oh. Like, yeah, I used to throw, man. So a lot of the times the show, I would just have to be like, okay, Christian, like, relax. Act like you're talking to church people. You know, just, and my show was, a lot of times I would throw some Spanish words out there that were bad words, but they didn't know, you know. So it ended up helping me a lot with public speaking and with the job that I do now, you know, mm-hmm. and being able to go out and talk to a big crowd of people. But at the same time, it's not the same as doing a podcast, because I could say whatever the hell I want on here.
When you stutter 20 times,
nobody's going to care.
We did that a lot, too. I think, like, the first like, 3 or 4 episodes, I had a friend text me. It was like, yo, listen, I like it, but stop reminding us that you're new at this. Because we would always say, like, guys, just bear with us. We're getting used to it. And at some point, we were making it more obvious than what it really was by mentioning it and having it present. It's about kind of having that balance. Be aware, but don't let it control how you talk, how you let it guide your conversations or your questions.
So do you have influence from, like, family influence or people that have done journalism in your life?
No, you're the first one. Yeah, okay. My older sister's a nurse. And my middle sister, she went for business management.
Okay.
And I'm totally, like, opposite. They're, like, left brain, I'm right brain. Yeah. I'm, like, artsy. I like this. And I like going out and interviewing people. So I'm totally opposite from my
sister. Things worked out. You said you went to Columbia for architect. Columbia's known for more of an artsy.
Yeah, it's an artsy
college. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got dance majors. You got art majors.
Broadcast.
Film. Yeah. Music management, all that.
I probably should have gone there. I ended up going to Lewis University for music.
Come on, have some respect for your school.
But I think, though, like, you know, like she was saying, like, she waited until her senior year to take it, and she realized, man, I didn't take it. But I think it speaks to, like, where she is now. Because I could say the same thing. Like, I definitely didn't take advantage. DePaul maybe wasn't the greatest for me. No, it's not that it's a
respect
great school.
Respect your schools,
but,
guys.
No, I do.
I like both those schools.
But I'm saying, I love DePaul, too. I really do. I went there for a reason. But I think, like, the experience of just going through college, learning about yourself, you know, that. So for you, even though maybe Columbia might have been better for you, I think it still makes
but
you who you are.
I didn't understand what I was doing until probably my senior year. Because, you know, if I could go back and change my major, I would. I didn't understand, you know, I do nothing with the podcast probably.
Yeah.
But other than that, I do nothing with what I went to school for. But I feel like sometimes you walk in there when you're 18, fresh out of high school. And I'm like, yo, like, I was a theology major when I first walked in. And I was like, I went to a class.
Oh, my.
I went to a class. I went to a class and I was like.
Nazi is dying in this corner, like, right now.
What did you plan on doing with a theology degree?
Oh, I wanted to be a theology professor, you know. And then originally.
And now you're drinking beer and saying fuck. What the Lord do to you?
I still got a little cross on that, dude. Originally, I wanted to do, like, a priesthood. When
Lord
I was in
Jesus.
High school,
Lord Jesus.
But I loved women too much, so I was like, I couldn't do it. And I have a strong relationship with God, and I have a strong relationship with what faith means. Mm-hmm. So to me, I wanted to see that in school, but I'm also very strong in history and what religion has done in our society. But then when I started going to classes, it made me question a lot of things. And I was like, what? I shouldn't be a theology major because I'm too weak when it comes down to questioning my faith. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me go into, I think the second thing that I thought about was business. And I was like, I kept hearing these people say, you don't have to go to school for business. That all comes to you. And then I was like, well, I was a musician. You know, I played a bunch of salsa bands in the city and all that stuff. So I was like, you know what? Let me just go to school for music. And in reality, it was just a hobby. And I think I got burnt out with the whole music thing. And we went into a tangent about college, but you know, it kind of goes into all the time, you know, behind.
You notice I didn't talk at all because that's where I would talk a lot.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, if you do what you love, and if you get to work in what you love, then it makes it easier. It doesn't make it a 9-to-5.
And piggybacking off of what you said, Christian, I want to take it back circle to what Lulu was talking about. She has her full-time job, right, while she was doing this radio station. Mm-hmm. She has her full-time job while she started her blog and starting any of these other endeavors. And really, for a lot of people, they will get stuck and they'll say, oh, I hate what I'm doing. But then that's it. They don't take action on it. And it takes a special kind of person to take it to the next level and say, hey, well, you know what? I'm going to create my own little lane over here. I'm going to start working on my own dream. Most people aren't going to work. For those who went to college, most people don't work in the field that they actually majored in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. After a little while, all that matters is, can you do the job? Once you've had a couple of jobs, employers, they might want you to have a degree, but they don't really care what it's in as much, except for a few exceptions. But with your blog, I'm curious, how long ago did you start that, and what's the theme? Because I'm seeing, I told you I was looking at it before we started recording. Before I ask you a question, because I'm the one who made like the Live Without website, and I've also created a few different projects. Most of them failed, but I mean that's life. Most businesses are gonna fail, so you just keep going. But I see a couple of different things here. So before I ask your question, I want to know, what's the theme? What are you trying to do with this website?
Okay, so I just started in
July. And what is the website also?
Okay, so I started in July, so it's still fresh, it's still new. I don't have a lot of contact up yet. Like, I still have some stuff that I want to put out there, like a lot more.
Yeah.
But I want to get my business cards too. So basically, my website is Urban Lifestyle. So I'm going to talk about music. I'm going to talk about fashion, health, anything that deals with urban lifestyle. Any events that are happening in the city, if I'm able to go there and be a part of it and interview these events, that's something I would like to do and put on my website. Like, they had Latino Festival or Latino Film. I think it was Film or Fashion. I wanted to do that. So, basically, it's just urban lifestyle.
Okay.
And the reason why is because when I was with the radio station, you do a lot of music, and I fell in love with that. And when I was with the magazine, I always had to, like, you have to fish for stories. And you have to put them out there, and they have to be good. And what people are looking at now, like, oh, like, what's in now? Okay, you know, they had the whole thing with the football players, meeting their wives or whatever. So I had to talk about that. Or when Paul Walker passed away, I had to put that up there. So, but not just that, I also like to find things that people don't know about. Like, I want to find artists that people don't know about. Yeah. So you can go on MTV News or B3 or whatever and find, you know, stories that are out there, but I want to put stories out there that people won't know. So, like, when I was with the radio station and a magazine, I did a lot of networking, especially with artists in different
genres,
cities.
In different
states and cities. So we kept in contact either through Instagram, through Twitter, through Facebook, and I, a few of those people, I was like, hey, I'm going to start up my own website, can I interview you for a second time? This time it's not for anyone else, but it's for me.
Yeah,
because I want to grow as a person. I want to grow, and I want to be able to say, I started with my website here, now I'm here. I want to continue to grow and just get noticed, and like, people would be like, you know, wow, this is awesome, she's doing something on her own. And have my own like line of work where I'm not always, you know, because I go to work and it's 9-to-5 job, and I think just having my own thing is gonna push me to, you know, expand and grow. And like I said, I want to do my business card soon, because there's like all these networking events in the city that I didn't even know, and I just started doing research, and I saw that there was like a few like networking events for people who have their own, like,
blogs and websites.
Entrepreneurs. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So once I get my business cards out, I'm going to start going to these events.
And I think that's one of the things that, like, Carlos and I have been kind of pushing on is, is identifying the people that the crowd does not know, that people don't know, you know, and are still up and coming, because we're up and coming, you know, like, we're trying to get our name out there. But at the same time, we want to be able to focus on or showcase people like in Chicago or Grand Rapids, especially the Midwest, where
it's kind of organically, that's kind of what's happened. People have been hitting us up around this area.
Yeah. And I think it's awesome that you're doing that as well, being a Latina as well, and putting things out there that are taboo, you know, things that people don't talk about. I know that there was this article that I was reading a couple of weeks ago. I think you had shown me, which it was Boricua Chicks, I think it was. Or,
yeah, I like that. I like that website.
Yeah, yeah, I loved it because it was, they were talking like of Afro Latinidad, and you know, being a Latina with pelo malo and stuff like stuff that you don't hear. You know what I'm saying?
I want to get them on the podcast.
Yeah, we should. Yeah,
I'm like trying to build up enough courage to hit them up.
I've hit them up already.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, they shared some of our stuff before, some of the early podcasts.
So that's one of our goals, you know, is that we could, you know, keep putting things out there that are not really talked about, and you know, talk about current events with our own flavor too. So,
because one of the things that I noticed is when you look at media at a national level, you always see New York, you see L.A., but there's a ton of talent in Chicago that I don't think it gets as much shine as it should, as one of the largest cities in the country.
And it's crazy, you know, being that I was in the music industry, that every good talent from Chicago has to leave Chicago in order to get noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, look at Chance the Rapper.
Yeah. Chance, exactly.
He's amazing, now he blew up.
Yep. Kanye, people like all these good artists from Chicago. Vic Mensa. And even Spanish artists. You know, you have Son by Four.
Which one from Chicago?
One of the singers was from Chicago. A product of CPS.
Apuro Dolor.
Clemente.
Really?
The big guy. Nice. I forgot his name. Who else?
Nothing. Like, oh, okay.
You know, there's another, but he had to leave. He went to Florida, got signed in Florida. You know, if you go all the way back to the salsa days and merengue days, Freddy Kenton, Chicago, had to leave Chicago to get noticed. So, unfortunately, here, we don't get a lot of exposure to the outside world, but we have some of the rawest and best talents here.
So now you know, if you're an upcoming artist, hit up luluinsights.com.
Yeah,
that's luluinsights.com.
So where are you trying to go? Like, since you're kind of just starting up on your own, everything, like, where are you trying to go from? Like, your website? What are kind of your...
I would like to have video recorded interviews on my website. So right now, everything is... You know, I interview you, I write the story, and I post it.
Yeah.
But I want to have other stuff on there where people, you know, people read stories, but let's be real. Sometimes people don't want to read a full-on story.
Right.
Yeah. They'll first sentence, skim, okay, cool. Right. And I don't want to, like, make my readers or people who are coming to my website, like, I'm bored, I don't want to read this. So I try to make the headline kind of like pop. So and I try to make my stories not too long because I know people will like stop reading.
Yeah, halfway through it.
Yeah, and so that's why I'll write stories. I try to write stories that are short and to the point, but I don't ever want to miss too much because then I get feedback from other people like, hey, you should have elaborated more on this story. And I'm like, well, I mean, when I do, some people don't like it.
I mean, you're always going to get those people that like criticize everything that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I realize I'm going to have a little bit of both. Some people want more, and some people just don't. And some people just look at the pictures.
I
just want pictures.
At the end of the day, you're always going to have people telling you should do something different.
Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
try and find that middle ground.
Yeah, and so I try to grab everybody's feedback and say, how can I better this? How can I do this? And so my next step is to get, like, a recorder and or have someone follow me and record me interviewing someone, kind of, like, having them do the editing because I suck at that, but and they can put it up there, and that way I can have videos on there. Someone suggested that I should do like YouTube videos. I didn't think about that. And I'm like, well, actually,
we're gonna jump into that soon.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna do that next and put that on my website.
Yeah. It'll be a good balance because a lot of listeners are either readers or some people like just the visual thing. Yeah. So being able to look at the interview and hear it.
I like the videos that have the words already on it. I'm both.
You're that lazy. Like, you're that lazy, huh?
you know when they have like those new videos, like on not YouTube but like Facebook, you know, that comes up, and they'll have like a story, they have like a couple words, and then they show a video. I like those, you know, because it shows me I'm a visual type of person, and reading hasn't always been my biggest thing. You know, like, I read, don't get me wrong, but I like to see stuff, and I like to be able to see it all together in a story. So
that's my thing. One advice I would give you is something that we've done, but I don't think we've really maximized using it, is to find out a way to collect some emails on your website.
Okay.
Social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter is cool, but they're always changing their algorithm every couple of years. Where really down the line, you're going to have to pay if you want to be. We're already there, but it's going to get worse. The most effective piece of marketing for any sort of online-based business is having someone's email where you go right to their inbox and no one else controls that but you. Right. We've done that. We've collected not even a bunch, but when you start building up your email list, there's people who we've never heard of who, you know, their Facebook might show like 1,000 likes, but they have 30,000 emails that when they send out a blog, 30,000 people are going to get it. And they may reshare it, they might not, but that's one thing I would recommend. But I really like the layout.
Thank you,
Frank
Ocean. Is there any story that you were like that you're like super proud of, that you were like, man, I was able to get this story out, or
that I have on my website now, or like
in general.
I would say, like, the artists that I interviewed from Jersey. Okay. I think those were ones that I was like, wow, like, I got someone from a different state.
What?
To do a story. So, it was a young rapper, and he's in Jersey right now.
Okay.
So, what else?
Have you done a lot of coverage in the Chicago area? You say you're from Chicago, born and raised. What area of Chicago?
I've done stuff in Chicago. I covered Soldier Field events, I think, when the Bears, this was in 2014, this is when I was with the radio station, when like they were starting off, I think like preseason.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool because I got to be there and like cover that live. So I'm like, wow, we're live from the radio station at Soldier Field.
At the
Soldier, yeah. That was like a big thing for me. I'm like, it's like, I'm going to be here. and... There was, I did interview, I forgot his name, he was an actor, but he did a lot of, like, film, and and this was back when I was a freshman in college, but I was doing interior architect, not thinking, like, hey, you're interviewing this director. I think it was Nicolas Cage's brother. He has an older brother.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of, like, directing and film, and I had interviewed him my freshman year, and then... You know, I was still doing architect, and then I realized when I was done with architect, I'm like, wait a minute, like, I need to do what I like. And my friend was like, why don't you do reading? Because you're good at it, you like it. I'm like, fine. And I thought about it, I'm like, well, I did interview that guy, like, that director. And, you know, I think about it now, like, that was a big thing for me. So, and I was like, only a freshman in college.
That's awesome. And I know, kind of to transition into some of the current events that are going on, and a lot of journalists are touching upon it.
Speaking of football.
Exactly. That's what sparked it. I was like, you know, this whole Colin Kaepernick issue that's going on. And I know, you know, one of the things that I've noticed with media, and we could probably talk back and forth, and Carlos could probably chime in, is that I feel like nowadays some journalists or the media tends to jump into a story too fast, maybe because they want that rating or they want people to read it without knowing the full facts behind it. And I know, like, this whole Kaepernick story kind of blew up out of proportion.
Wait, are you guys all familiar with the basic story?
I prepped them. I made sure that they read a couple links here and there.
Everybody, it's kind of hard to not read up on.
You want to go ahead and relay it for our listeners who may not know.
Basically, Colin Kaepernick is a quarterback for San Francisco. So what's the 49ers. I'm not a big football fan at the NFL level. But basically, he actually started doing this earlier in the preseason. People just didn't catch on until about the third or fourth game that he wasn't standing up for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. And when they ended up interviewing him, you know, he pretty much said, why should I stand up for a flag that represents, you know, so much negativity. We've got black people of color dying around the country at the hands of police. And so he was making a moral stand by it. And then immediately you ended up getting two groups of people, a bunch of who immediately condemned him, a bunch who immediately supported him. But then throughout those camps, I feel like they're just going a little further apart each week when he doesn't stand up.
You feel like they're going a little further apart? I feel like they're kind of getting the like their understanding now.
Okay.
There was an article that came out, so I was reading up about him a little bit more, and I found out that he's dating a pretty big influential person. Okay. When it comes down to the Black Lives Matters movement, and she's also a radio DJ, a radio host. So that was the first thing that people started saying, was like, oh, this guy converted to radical Islam because he let his beard grow and his hair grow. And there was a tweet out where it said that so the girl that he's dating, I forgot her name.
She's the radio station host in Hot 97 in New York. I don't know if she's connected to Black Lives Matter.
But she is Muslim.
Okay.
Right?
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Her name. She's from the Bay Area originally.
She might not be connected like as part of, not that, yeah, but she talks about it a lot.
Correct.
Right?
Okay.
Very, very big activist. So he's dating her, right? So then there was, hold on 1 second. There was a
talking to Mike.
There was an issue where she had posted on Instagram that her, or Twitter, that her wedding was going to be full out following the Islamic tradition, right? Mm-hmm. So that's when everybody was like, yo, this guy is a radical Islam. He's leaving his beard, a radical Muslim, I mean. He's leaving his beard grow. He has his hair all crazy now. But, you know, so this guy is associated to ISIS. The first thing everybody always says when you have something about, mm-hmm. when you go against the norm, right? So, you know, and they were like, he's being radicalized by his girlfriend, etc. So it just so happened, you know, that he came out and talked about what he was doing and why he didn't want to stand. It made a little bit more sense. And then he had another interview, and this kind of goes into another topic that I want to cover in a later podcast, where he talked about the issues within mental health and our veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I've talked about so many times, because I have family that are veterans, right? And they all suffer from mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And these guys were veterans and then became independentista Puerto Ricans, you know? So it was like, yo, I fought for the U.S., but the U.S. didn't do anything for me. So, mm-hmm. you know, blah, blah. All right. So that's besides the point. We'll talk about that in another episode. But so he talked about that. He's like, yo, there's at least 22 veterans that kill themselves on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Because of mental health issues and depression, and the U.S. is not doing anything about it. So not only did he take a stand, you know, and I was torn apart in the beginning. I was like, yo, like, he's making money. He's not suffering like we are, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm like, yo, he is the guy that needs to do this type of stuff, because he is where the camera is every Sunday, mm-hmm. right? The Sunday belongs to the NFL, believe it or not.
Yeah. He's using his platform, which I can appreciate. And
people, people tested him, and he's like, yo, I'm going to give my first $1 million of my contract to social issues. And you know what? I'm going to side with the veterans, and I'm going to take a knee every time the anthem comes up.
But you know why that happened?
He spoke to somebody, right?
Yeah, there was a guy who I think was a former football player for the University of Texas, was also a veteran. He's done some writing, has a little buzz around him. He wrote a piece condemning Kaepernick, or pretty much telling him, this is why I think you're wrong. Kaepernick invited him, and they had a one-on-one meeting. So after the last game, they took a picture together, and I think that's where he decided, hey, I'm going to take a knee, but I'm still not going to stand. That was kind of the middle ground. Yeah. There was also a huge hashtag, veterans for Kaepernick.
Yeah,
I saw that video, because they were like, I fought for his freedom to actually
the right, a bunch of people.
Exactly, the right for him to not stand up.
That's why I think, mm-hmm. and if you believe different, tell me, you know, but I think it's so wrong when people automatically, you know, he should be standing up. Mm-hmm. What kind of an un-American is he? I'm like, that's the whole point of this country, is that I don't have to, you know,
stand up. Did you see that I saw this video, I forget who posted it, but they were saying, like, oh, is the national anthem racist? Mm-hmm. And I guess there's a whole longer version that was taken out.
Yeah, I heard about that, too.
I mean, granted, I didn't do my research, so I don't know if that's true. I'm just going off of what's on
mine. No, it's accurate. It's accurate.
Yeah.
So it wasn't taken out. What happens is when you go to sporting events, they're going to do the shortened version of the anthem. Okay. If you read the whole thing, the longer version, then there has one. Because Francis Scott Key, the guy who wrote the national anthem, he owned slaves. And a part of it said, like, in a nicer way, like, fuck those guys, the slaves who are going with the British in order to fight for their freedoms. We're going to take them back.
Yeah.
So then, and this is where it comes down to it. Like, I feel a lot of people take things out of context, too, you know, because you have things that were written, you know, 100 years ago that was the norm, you know, unfortunately. And nowadays, let's say we might write something about, you know, ISIS or condemning Islam. And then 20, 30 years later, it's like, man, this guy was so racist. He was condemning Islam, blah, blah. But that was like the norm back then. So I feel like some people tend to take that out of context as well. Unfortunately, we all know, you know, that this country was built by slaves, you know, and it happened in our own countries of Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic and all that. But a lot of times when we read articles of those days and we tend to look at it in our viewpoint of nowadays, it's going to look screwed. It's going to look kind of weird because it's not what is normal to us now. You know, so
I don't think we could use that, though, to then say to like make it slightly OK. And I know you're not doing that, but some people will say, whatever, that was 200 years ago. That was 500 years ago. Like, we don't got to worry about that. It's different now. But so what that does is minimizes, you know, 400 years of oppression, slavery, and torture. Exactly. And I think it's good to analyze something within its time, but also say, yeah, that time was really fucked up still. Mm-hmm. And some people have a hard time making that distinction.
So when it comes down to the case of something like that, right, do you think it will be okay to get rid of that?
Rid of that stanza?
Yeah, you think it should be something like...
I think that that stanza should be, if you could officially remove it, yes.
Yeah.
But I personally would never focus my time on that as a cause.
Exactly.
I think that's a waste of time because if the majority of the country really feels it's a problem, then that would have already been done a long time ago. Yep. So I rather move around life understanding who I'm dealing with.
Exactly.
So if we all now know, hey, the stanza has this piece of information, and you're still critiquing Kaepernick for the reason you think he did it, but he gave like an 18-minute interview where he was very clear about the reason. So if you actually heard that interview and you're still giving your stance, and that tells me more about you than it does about...
Exactly.
So you're
about the issue.
You know? Correct. So you're using... You know, America has a way that they like to police their athletes who tend to be... At least the largest figures in basketball, football, who tend to be black in America. They like them to stay quiet. They like them to perform in the field. But when it comes to anyone speaking out, you know, going back, Muhammad Ali, the track stars who in the Olympics put their fist up. And you keep going back, when somebody speaks up and stands up and goes against mainstream America, they're told, hey, you have to be gracious. You have to be thankful. It's like, hell no.
Yeah.
They worked all their life. They earned every single penny that they got. The fact that you're enjoying it on TV, like, you know, we as fans should be thankful. We're paying them for this.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of layers to what Kaepernick is doing, and you're seeing it spread around. Now, a player from the Seattle Seahawks sat down at the last game. Mm-hmm. And what I think is going to happen is if he stays on the team, because let's be real, he hasn't been producing too. For those who watch the game, and again, I'm not a big fan, but even I know that he hasn't been too hot lately. But if he stays on the team and he keeps sitting, and it keeps getting a buzz, what you're going to see is the fans stay sitting down. You're going to see more black and brown people specifically, and a lot of allies who are going to start sitting down at the actual games.
Yeah,
and then what's going to happen? And so that it's going to keep growing. And so the people who tell him, we want you to protest, they'll tell folks in Baltimore, you know, in Ferguson, like, no, you shouldn't riot. They're telling him, you shouldn't sit down. So in other words, you're just saying, don't do anything except what we're saying and doing.
Right. And I think,
sorry for the rant, y'all.
That's all good. And I think that. and when I was seeing this whole, I was talking to my dad, and we were talking about this whole, like, Kaepernick not standing up for the anthem. And to me, it's not a big deal. It's like, do what you want to do. My grandma used to not stand up for the anthem. You know what I'm saying? And she's super independentista. So I remember me and my dad were talking. We're like, you know what? Puerto Ricans shouldn't stand up for the anthem. Because right now, we're getting treated like, you know.
Yes, you are.
Like the mierda.
Are you Puerto Rican?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not going to lie. When the national anthem comes on, I don't really put my hand on my chest. I just... Yeah. You know, I put my hand behind my back and I put my head down. I'm respectful, but at the same time, I'm not going to be there.
When I was little.
Yeah, you know, okay. Yes, this is me.
Very prideful.
And that's one of the things my dad was saying, and we were talking about it. We're like, you know what? Like, Puerto Ricans should take a stand and not stand up. You know, and I'm not saying go ahead and do this, mi gente. You know,
I am. I support you.
I'm just giving, you know, I'm just giving my viewpoint. But because of the things that are happening in Puerto Rico right now, where we're getting treated, you know, there's stuff that they want to do the minimum wage for $4.25.
Yeah.
There's stuff, you know, the Promesa bill and all this stuff. It's like, come on, mi gente. Like,
it's just unbelievable there.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So to me, it's like, I understand where he's coming from. It's this frustration that you have, and he has the ability to move a lot of people. It's just like what's the guy's name that came out in, was it the Grammys that he spoke or the Oscars? He comes out in a couple shows. I think
talking about the guy from Grey's Anatomy.
Jesse Williams. Yeah, he took out a stance. And this is another topic. I'm gonna go into another topic there, but I have a lot of friends, Moreno friends, you know, that were like, oh, well, he's not black enough, you know, to do this stance. The same thing with Kaepernick. Oh, well, he's not black enough, or he wasn't raised by black people.
Status, which where people I are gonna pay attention.
And it's like Stacey Dash and Raven Simone.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the same thing with them.
Mm-hmm. With that piece of opinion is bullshit, and it stems from a lot of lack of knowledge. Like, taking it back to the interview with Abel Muhammad, that stems from a lack of knowledge itself, and understanding who you are and where your roots come from.
Understanding your roots, you know what I'm
and
saying?
So colorism does exist, right? And it happens amongst Latinos. You look at Univision, you look at any novela, you're going to see lighter skinned Latinos, Latinas, where the typical Latina essentially looks more European than they do indigenous or African in their features. And so a lot of times there's a real issue that's being expressed, but when they say he's not black enough, then that's when you're saying that's bullshit. That's when I would say, okay, that's what that comes from, a lack of knowledge on what you're talking about.
Well, then with that, so okay, with that conversation, let's take it back a couple of years back, where there was the one lady, she was the president of the NAACP, I think it was.
You're talking about Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah.
It was a chapter in Seattle.
A chapter, right, in Seattle. And she wasn't Morena at all.
Yeah.
Right?
No, she was not.
She was not. But she understood the cause, right? And when we talked with Abel Muhammad, we talked about, you know, guys that, people that have become part of the cause. Now, let me be completely honest. Like, if let's say I had a Latino organization and it had happened in the school that I was at. I didn't feel right having a non-Latino leading the Latino organization, because to me, it didn't feel like they completely understood. Yeah, they read about it. They might have seen it, but I didn't think they understood. So what's your take on that? Or what's you guys' take on that?
Yeah. If you guys have an opinion, I'll let you talk, then I'll chime in after.
I
might be wrong.
I can understand the feeling of, like, wanting your own, right? Mm-hmm. Like, your kind to represent you. But I think, just going back to our argument of using your status to make a difference, if that's what's going to work, if that's what's successful, why not?
Okay.
If you have the money, you have the status, why not?
Use your voice if you're supportive of
that. If you're supportive, you don't. It's not a matter of you have to identify 100%. But if you support it and your morals and values align with what they're trying to fight for, why not?
Okay. But let's be realistic, too. Like, we've been it's been ingrained in our brain from since we were born. Like, and I don't know about you guys, but for me, like, let's say a Latino marries a white, like one of my cousins will marry a white lady, right? The family always says, "Oh, mira, se casó con una blanquita." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right? Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah. So, but then
like you marry a moreno, "Oh, se casó con un moreno." Like, there's always that. So in the back of your mind, you always have that mentality of, oh, maybe, you know, if they're not pure or whatever, like, maybe they don't understand our struggle.
That has to do a lot with the older generations and, like, the old school way of thinking. Because, you know, you got your grandma, your grandpa, uncles from back in the day, like, mira, no haga eso, mira, you know, and then you're like, but then as we get older, I feel like we could change that. You know, like,
true.
Don't think how our grandparents think or how it was back then. Things change, you know, things evolve. So I don't know. I just always think that's an old school way of thinking, especially growing up, especially with me.
Yeah. I think it's important to understand what they're feeling and acknowledge that. But, yeah, we have to keep
going. Unfortunately, too, but it does still kind of play a big role in your personal life. Like, I remember growing up and not saying that my family... You know, we might have a couple races here and there, to be quite honest with you, because I think every Puerto Rican family has somebody. But I remember, like, going and thinking, oh, man, like, could I bring this girl home? You know, what would my family think? And not saying that my family, my parents would, but you know, reality. Older generation.
Right.
And you start feeling it, and that sucks, you know, in reality, because it's like you shouldn't really have to judge somebody by the color of their skin or whatever. Yeah. But unfortunately, I think throughout the years and the mentality of the older generations was like that.
I think to develop an understanding of the conversation, it's about understanding the difference between race, ethnicity, and nationality.
Yep.
Right? So race, ethnicity, when I look at Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and Cubans, I say racially and ethnically, we're very, very similar. Yeah. To me, it's like saying one person's from New York, the other's from L.A., they're both American. Yeah. Nationality, they're three different countries. But when we're looking at Puerto Ricans, and I'll just use those three, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and Cubans who come to America, oftentimes they use the word ese un moreno, but they mean that's a black American, as opposed to that. If they find out, oh, eso no es moreno, it's like, oh, es de Loíza. Like, he's Puerto Rican from Loíza.
Or they will say estrigueño.
Estrigueño, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So the way that it's classified in Latin America was different. And so sometimes the words that are used have a different meaning behind them. And so when we interpret it from the American lens, it's different. With that said, there's still a lot of racism amongst Latinos and a lot of, and within it as well. But I'm not going to let you off the hook with Rachel Dolezal.
Okay, okay.
That's. I wouldn't agree with the idea that she understood the cause. Actually, no. I'll tell you what.
So you will say she didn't understand the cause.
No, I'll take it back. I'll say she understood the cause well enough and took it for her advantage. Do you guys know who we're talking about? I'll break it down. Rachel Dolezal she is a white woman who, over time, started portraying herself and presenting herself as a black woman, possibly of mixed ancestry. If you see her childhood picture, she had very straight hair.
Yeah.
But now she was teaching Africana studies classes and talking about black hair, teaching people how to do their hair. You can do that if you're white, if you're talented enough, cool. But she wasn't correcting people, so she was allowing herself to be viewed as black.
Oh, well,
Benefits and positions that were socially and culturally understood to be something left there for black people. Okay, she complained about scholarships at Howard University, historically black college out in D.C. She complained about certain scholarships and being discriminated against for being white while she was in college. Yet when she moved across the country over to Seattle, she was presenting herself as black. And so when she was asked, are you black? Her whole angle was that she understands herself to be black. So you know how people will use the...
you're so Latino,
the conversation of transsexual, transgender. She used the same wording, but try to say, oh, you know, we are like she used the same type of verbiage to almost present herself as, oh, I understand myself to be black. And while yes, we all, you know, at the root of humanity, it all comes from Africa. Like, no, race and ethnicity are real things in the way they're performed and acknowledged in the country. And so that's why I think she understood it well enough and used it. So she's the worst kind of person because she understood it and then used it to leverage and take those benefits away from people. Like, I think that if you're an ally, like for myself, I'm not a woman. I understand that I have a lot of privileges as a man. So I believe that I play a better role in using that male privilege to help a woman maybe present her views herself rather than saying this is what I think should happen for him. So I can speak about it, sure, but I don't think I should be the primary person speaking about women's issue. I think that there should be a woman who has that lived experience. I feel the same way about organizations who are working for Latino black cause. I think anybody can work, but I think the role of an ally is different than the person who's speaking from experience.
And I think there should be a distinction there.
I think they're better to represent.
Correct.
Right? Especially, but it's like, okay, like me personally, I'm Puerto Rican, yeah, mm-hmm. but I wasn't born there.
Yeah.
I took classes in college, I can't even say that I speak Spanish fluently. So what I say, just because that I'm Puerto Rican, am I confident enough to represent a Puerto Rican, let's say, organization? Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to say no. But to your arguments,
I think you can.
But that's just me saying because I don't. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm just saying, like, oh, I'm not Latino mm-hmm. enough, which is fine, whatever.
Hate I was going to say, that's what you're saying without
right,
saying it.
Right, yes, and I am. I am making that argument against myself, but I just feel like I would say someone that maybe understands a little better, fine. But I do agree with your point of, like, if you are of that culture and you identify mm-hmm. completely, that, yeah, you'd probably be better to represent that.
It's a comfortability mm-hmm. thing, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you see someone who, a Hispanic organization, let's say, or uh-huh. a Latino organization, and a Latino is running it, you feel more comfortable than if you uh-huh. see a white person up there talking exactly. about Latino things. Not to, say yeah. that what they're saying isn't important yeah. or they can't do the job, mm-hmm. but it just makes yeah. a Latino feel more comfortable yeah. knowing a yeah. Latino.
I think we all agree yeah. that there's yeah. space for and white I, people exactly. to help and to work in it. So white people, we still love you, but it's just a different role.
I think Jose yeah. Martí put it really well, too. You know, he was talking about his writings, and I quote a lot of Jose Martí because of our Cultivo shirt. But Jose Martí wrote that you cannot lead a people and not know what they're going through, right?
Right, right.
There's a specific quote that I couldn't find it on my phone. I was hitting up the Google machine and it wasn't working. But basically saying, you know, if you cannot understand their struggle if you're not from, you know, if you're not them, you know, right. you cannot mm-hmm. come to another country and try to run them, which kind of brings me into the Puerto Rico topic, you know. So you cannot go into a country, try to run them and not know exactly what's going on and not know who they are, not know how to cut a caña in half and eat out of your vegetation, you know. And how are those people going to respect you? How are those people going to work mm-hmm. for you? And I think it all goes together enough other talks that we've had where we talked about education and being like that coach with that kid and having that kid do well for you, you know, because they feel invested in you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also has to do with the country. And I think right now, to switch topics, mm-hmm. to talk about Puerto Rico, I think that's the feeling that a lot of Puerto Ricans are getting right now mm-hmm. is the fact that there's a huge disconnect between this Promesa bill and these people that are going to go in and take over and change what's happening in the island.
Can you talk about what that is?
Yeah, give a quick summary.
Yeah.
Basically, they have, you know, there's a lot of corruption going on in the government, and I'm not a scholar on it. I don't know 100%. Mm-hmm. I just know the basic gossip behind it, right? So there's a government. The government in Puerto Rico is very corrupt. There's a lot of problems going on, and as we all know, Puerto Rico is in a huge deficit to hedge fund owners and, mm-hmm. and they have a lot of money that they're losing, mm-hmm. not losing, that they owe, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're basically in bankruptcy. Unfortunately, Puerto Rico being a quote-unquote colony of the U.S., and I say that in a very independentista mindset, but lot of people, the Puerto Rico is a commonwealth since 1952 of the U.S., meaning that they're not a state. They benefit from some stuff from the U.S., but then they're not tied to the U.S. like a state is, right? Mm-hmm. So a state, when they go through a deficit, they could go ahead and they could file bankruptcy. For bankruptcy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they don't have a representative in the government, right?
They do have a governor, but Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico cannot vote for presidency.
No, I know that, but I'm saying, like, you're talking about state,
Congress and Senate. Puerto Ricans have an advocate, but they have no voting rights.
And they also have lobbyists, but
mm-hmm. yeah.
And lobbyists could motion for bills and stuff like that. Right. But when it comes down to it, what was I saying? So with Puerto Rico being not a state mm-hmm. or any benefits in that sense, it cannot file for bankruptcy. And right now they're in a huge deficit. I mean, they're losing money left and right. Puerto Ricans are leaving the island in the thousands, going to Florida, falling homeless in Florida, falling homeless in other places like Chicago. So this kind of reminds me of back in the 1930s when they were coming over here with Operation 1950s, I'm sorry, with the bootstrap. So a lot of people are leaving Puerto Rico, but so now the government's like, hey, we need something. The U.S., help us out. Because the government in Puerto Rico was like, we're not going to pay off this debt. We need something to be done. And then out of all these discussions, they finally realize that they're a colony of the U.S. Bullshit. You know, we've been knowing we're a colony of the U.S. It just so happened. So
we just talk about it every 20 years.
Yeah, we're trying to. No, honestly, we're trying. Puerto Rico is trying to basically say, hey, we're here. You guys have used us. Now help us out. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. is saying, fuck you guys. You know, we don't really care. Because none of the presidential candidates are talking about it anyways. But so they're going for this. And then now the U.S. is like, okay, cool. We're going to send a group of people that we select to go to Puerto Rico and fix the whole issue that's going on over there. Mm-hmm. Puerto Ricans are like, what the fuck? Like, how are you going to send people from your side? Of course they're going to pay. They're going to go with what the hedge fund owners want mm-hmm. instead mm-hmm. of what the people of Puerto Rico need. Right? So they're sending all these people over to Puerto Rico to try to fix this problem. But there are, you know, there are business owners, people with you know, hedge fund owners and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So of course it's gonna happen. So one of the things that they've been proposing is this Promesa bill, and
who's
I'm not
proposing it.
The
politicians in the U.S.
politicians mm-hmm. in the U.S.
Okay.
But what I'm not well versed on this Promesa bill. I haven't read it completely, so I've been seeing a couple different cliff notes behind mm-hmm. it. And one of the things is that they want to have the minimum wage lowered to $4.25 mm-hmm. for anybody under 25 years old. They want to, you know, do a lot of things that do not benefit the people of Puerto Rico. They want to make mm-hmm. sure that all the debt that is paid onto the hedge fund owners first. Mm-hmm. That means cutting funding to schools and social services.
Yeah, I think they were talking about how many schools were just recently closed in July.
So a lot of times is, and this takes us back to the whole where we've been used and abused, you know, so many times.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us kind of agree on that.
I think a lot of Puerto Ricans are just fed up because, you know, we got all these people from the U.S. going there vacationing. So you're putting money on resorts or places to stay, and that's where the government, that's what they want. They want people, okay, come here in the night, but don't go to this area because if you see these people, they're a little poor, and it's just... The healthcare over there is the worst. I would not want to be in Puerto Rico and get sick there.
Yeah.
Because a friend of mine, her brother was in, he lives in Puerto Rico, and he was in a really bad car accident. Now, it was so bad, like, he ended up flying. They had to, like, take him to the hospital. Now, at the hospital, she was just telling me, like, people were laying there waiting to get in their rooms.
Yep.
They had, you can't even go inside the hospital. And, like, if there's five people with you, 2 minutes per person. And the hospital's cold, and mm-hmm. they have just people lying on the in the hallways. Mm-hmm. It sucks. Like, she was like, I do not ever want to be sick and be in Puerto Rico.
Yep.
And like people from Puerto Rico, they actually go to Florida mm-hmm. for their doctors mm-hmm. because the healthcare in Puerto Rico is just it sucks. It's you know it's sad. Like the living of you know the living in Puerto Rico is not something I would ever want to do. I would love you know visiting. Yeah, but
what part's your family from?
My mom's son is from Arecibo, and my dad's son is from El Campo, from Las Marias.
Oh,
all
wow.
up in the mountains.
That's where my grandfather's from, Las Marias.
Jíbaro life.
That's really Jíbaro.
Yeah, oh, my God. I went there when I was young, and I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
I love it. It was nice for a couple days, but I can't be here. But, you know, they're so used to their own ways.
Yeah.
You know, they've never been on a plane. I'm like, get on a plane and go out there. But you go to Puerto Rico, and it's sad. Like, mm-hmm. just the living and them not being able to vote,
and it shouldn't be sad. That's the problem, that we pride ourselves of being the greatest country in the world, we being the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. And Puerto Rico being part of it, yet we get the worst of it. And I think one of the things, too, that this Promesa bill was talking about was that the U.S., I mean, that this group of people wanted to privatize national resources, right? Mm-hmm. So national resources being La Playa, so they could do more resorts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's good for tourism, but where is that money really going to?
It's not going towards their
it's going towards the pocket of the
government.
Yeah.
And the government.
Or not just the government, but it's going into the pocket of whoever owns that resort.
Yeah.
You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? The government's probably going to make a couple bucks.
They're going to make a lot of money, but then the actual wealth will stop circulating in Puerto Rico, and it's going to circulate to banks in Europe and in the U.S. Because that's where the bulk of it is going to go.
Yeah. And it's like, well, this is a whole different place, but Cuba. So mm-hmm. you know how now you could go to visit Cuba, now you could go mm-hmm. to Havana. Yeah. So I was watching a show where they were saying, you know, we got like all, you know, it's going to become where people could come visit. They're going to make hotels,
mm-hmm.
and they asked the local there, you know, how do you like it? Do you like the idea that our people are coming from America and making all these like hotels? And he was like, no,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't like it.
No,
he was just, no, I don't like it because you know, you're going to come and take over, and it's and the people are going to get bored. And
exactly. And it also goes in hand in hand with this documentary that I was watching called Poverty Inc. I don't know if you guys, if you have Netflix, watch it.
No.
It just basically talks about, you know, all these companies that go in there, all these nonprofit organizations that go in there, and they supply people with rice, and we're going to supply you with solar panels and all these things. And then eventually the people in the country that are supplying that at the moment
start depending.
Yeah, well, I'm saying like you're a farmer, mm-hmm. right? You do rice. But ahora viene the U.S. and is giving rice for free in Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah.
What am I going to do as a farmer? I'm going to lose my whole cosecha that I've been working on for the whole year. There goes my money. And it's a trickle-down effect. You know, then I can't buy anything.
Then the farmer stops farming. When the free rice dries up, then the people have no farms and no food.
Y el síndrome del pollito. But
that started happening in Puerto Rico in the early 1900s.
El síndrome del pollito, which means that, you know, el pollito knows that he has to come in and eat out of your hand, right? So that's what has happened in Puerto Rico, right? Since 1952, when Luis Muñoz Marín became...
I would go before that.
Way before that. But I will say 1952, when the huge change happened, right, where we became a Commonwealth of the U.S., this whole idea of I'm going to have benefits, I'm going to have Social Security, I don't have to work. So el síndrome del pollito has happened in Puerto Rico, where now it's like a lot of people don't want to work. A lot of people are like, why? If I get welfare, I get this. But unfortunately, when you don't work, when you don't have entrepreneurship, when you don't have businesses, it affects everybody else. Everybody else gets affected by it.
It's a deadly cycle. That starts. Mm-hmm.
So that's what's been happening in Puerto Rico, and I could go on a rant.
If you want to see what can happen in Puerto Rico, look to you all live in Chicago. Look over to my state in Michigan, and look what's going on in Detroit. What's going on in Flint?
Exactly.
What they're doing in Puerto Rico is exactly what they did in those two cities a few years back. They just called it the emergency manager law. Cities that weren't able to sustain themselves and that were going into bankruptcy had all local politicians overruled by a committee personally chosen by the governor. It was those people that let the Flint water crisis happen. It's because of those people that they've stopped funding, and funding has decreased in a lot of Detroit schools. They opened up a lot of land where they're selling it to billionaires at really, really cheap rates, that they can come in and build stadiums, that they can come in and build stuff. But they're not going to sell it at that cheap rate to the actual people who are from the city, who've been there during the bad times. You're going to see those things. They're going to start pushing charter schools in Puerto Rico so that they can stop funding the public schools. Yep. And then when those charter schools keep failing, they'll shut them down. And the cycle continues to happen.
Unfortunately.
But it's already, it starts a little, big policies like that. When it happens at a large level, do a little research and you'll see them happening in smaller cities in different parts of the world. They test them out in smaller venues and then they start applying them towards larger areas.
Yep, and unfortunately, mi gente, it is our people that tend to suffer, you know, the people that don't have the ability or don't have the resources to read or you know, research a little bit more, and they fall blind. Le ponen, you know, the Kobe Howard of heads or whatever the phrase is, but unfortunately, they just go with the flow, right? There's a lot of people that say, I'm just going to go with the flow. As long as my kids have food in their mouth, blah, blah, blah. But we can't be like that. It's just, it comes down to the point of having pride in who you are. There's also another quote. Who said this? Mejor morir de pie que rodilla.
Mexican guy.
I think it was...
es mejor
so basically,
morir de pie que vivir en rodillas. Mexican guy in the Mexican Revolution. He has a really huge mustache. I forgot his
Pancho
name.
Villa?
No, it wasn't Pancho Villa, but it was his contemporary.
So
Google it, guys. Do your Googles. You'll find it.
It kind of goes back to the whole talk that we've been having in different episodes, where we talk about, you know, standing up for your rights, standing up for what's going on.
Because and using your standpoint, which goes back to Colin Kaepernick, mm-hmm. like if you have that
status,
that opportunity to speak out on things like this, you're reaching a lot of people that might not have the resources to look up themselves.
I have a question for all of you. I am Dominican, so I can talk about Puerto Rico, but honestly, it personally doesn't affect anyone that I know living on the island. So I have, my grandma used to have a house there, but most of the people I know already left Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Do you all think that Puerto Ricans on the mainland have a role or have an obligation to start voicing their opinion and pushing back, because there's just as many Puerto Ricans here. That Puerto Rican nation expands outside of the island nowadays.
Hell yeah, we do.
Okay. I think there's so many people are responsible, mm-hmm. not just Puerto Ricans, but yeah. this country as a whole. We mm-hmm. we're taking ownership of this island. Yeah. Why are we not taking responsibility mm-hmm. for it?
They're saying everyone should speak up.
I think everyone has an obligation mm-hmm. to do something.
Okay. It pisses me off when I hear Puerto Ricans that live in the U.S. say, "Ah, eso boricua de allá, eso jíbaro de allá, they should deal mm-hmm. with it." Like, motherfucker, like, you like, that's your yeah. people. Right. Yeah. That's where you came from. Mm-hmm. That's your ancestors. Oh, that's their problem. No, somebody in your family also had debt in there.
I think it is to a lot of Puerto Ricans who live in the U.S., who were born and raised here. We feel entitled because mm-hmm. we don't know their struggles, so we're not there. We mm-hmm. think we got it made here. We got it all. Yep. Right. I think a lot of Puerto Ricans in the U.S., we're just very comfortable in our own ways, and we're spoiled. And mm-hmm. if you think about it, America's, we're bullies. We're big bullies. Yeah. We're like, we can do this to you, but you can't do this to us. Mm-hmm. We can do this to Puerto Rico, but we're not really going to help you out with your people. Yeah. But we're going to have a lot of people come here on vacation, but we're not going to help your people out. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. it's, we're bullies.
Yep. Yeah. And also on the way that, you know, it's just using our resources and using the stuff that we had. And unfortunately, we're here because people had to leave because somebody else took their land, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, or somebody else grabbed or established a business mm-hmm. that did not go back to the country in Puerto Rico. And unfortunately, those people had to move out of their area. Yeah. And also, I feel like a lot of the people here, unfortunately, throughout the years, don't feel invested in Puerto Rico. Whereas if you talk to somebody that came here in the Operation Bootstrap days, or people that came here in the early 1950s or 1940s or 30s, they had the mentality of coming here, working, and going back to uh-huh. Puerto Rico, right? The same immigrant story that we hear from the Mexicans mm-hmm. nowadays. So they were like, no, Puerto Rico, that's where I belong. Yet we have a lot of Puerto Ricans where have gone through a whole, you know, years, and have lost that, oh, I want to go back to Puerto Rico, or have lost that connection to Puerto Rico, but still rock that Puerto Rican t-shirt right. on the Puerto Rican Day
Parade. Don't know the history.
Don't know the history.
I'm Puerto Rican, yep. but I don't know anything about Puerto Rico yeah. or the history. Or
they don't even know what the Latin flag is, or they don't even know what the original color is, you know.
We need to get an independentista here for an interview.
We do. I need to connect with some people you at Humboldt Park.
Okay,
I got some questions and conversations. DePaul,
she doesn't work there anymore. She's in California. I need to hit her up because
there's a lot great in Chicago. Yeah, I personally believe that, you know, Latinos in the U.S. I'll break it out outside of Puerto Ricans. Although many of us are, you know, citizens, some are permanent residents, some are undocumented, but as a community, Latinos in the U.S. are a political and cultural extension of what you have in Latin America. And so when we see policies that are damaging people in Latin America, I do think it is kind of part of our collective duty to speak up and talk about it, just like we all should for other countries, so the U.S. can stop being a bully. Because at the highest level, there's a certain mindset, but within the broader population, there's a lot of diversity in there. And so people have to keep speaking up.
Yeah.
All right.
And you know, we still got enough time to transition to another.
How long have we recorded?
Really positive right now. This got just like down.
Hey, it's La Verdad talk.
I know, but can we like pump it up a little bit? Like,
I think you were gonna bring up something that wasn't positive.
Off with, like,
I know exactly.
We'll save that topic for another show.
For sure. But mi gente, we've talked about a lot of stuff today.
I had fun.
Nathi, you've been quiet.
I have. Nathi,
what the hell?
I feel like y'all schooled me a little bit. You're
falling asleep over here.
After he told her she looks tired, she just.
I know. I was like.
Stop talking.
Give her another beer.
You want some Douce?
I'm just going to knock out. Yeah.
You want some
Douce? Shot of Douce. She needs like a full shot of that.
Mi gente, we're here to talk La Verdad, yeah. which is La Verdad to me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, might not be what you agree with, and might not be your truth. But it's La Verdad for me. It's what I live on a daily basis. Same thing with Carlos. Same thing with Nathi, Fig, Lulu. I appreciate you guys being here.
Definitely.
Hopefully we got enough energy to do another show in a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, mi gente, it's about you know, going and fighting for what you believe in and what your ancestors fought for.
Yeah. And, you know? And Lulu, why don't you shout out your social medias, yeah, your website one more time.
It's lulusinsights.com. My Facebook, you could type in Lucia Lulu Crespo. My Instagram and my Twitter are the same thing. They're Little Lulu to You, only my Instagram is Little Lulu, the number 2 and the letter U. And then my Twitter is Little Lulu to You, TOYOU. So it's spelled out.
That's a lot. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to put it all on the description for this episode.
I might have lost you a few times. I lost you at the first one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. No, I'll put all these links up. So if you guys want to follow her, support her blog. Soon enough, she's going to have a way to collect your email, put that in there so she can message you directly.
I think it's on there, but I think it's at the right tab on the top. There's
maybe I didn't catch it.
It
so
might
we'll do
be
that.
Under contact. I thought I put it, but I'll double check my email. Go home and fix it.
And mi gente, add me on Snapchat. I'm trying to get more followers on there.
I am too.
Alekin_31.
Find me on every piece of social media. This is Carlos M. That's it. If you put "this is Carlos M," you'll find me Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. I don't want you on my Facebook. Just follow La Verdad. La Verdad LTD.
Nati3Eyes_21. All social media. Find me.
Or we can do like the thing where you find each other.
Yeah. We can follow each other here. This is for the public.
Yeah.
Mi gente, it's been a pleasure. Thank you guys for following us once again.
Yeah, gracias.
And listening once again. And be on the lookout for some more shows. And make sure that you follow, rate, subscribe under LaVeldadLTD.com. Take care, mi gente.